We're going to open the Senate Committee on Education. Today is Thursday, March 9th, 2017. Sorry we had to get started a little bit late, but we had dairy air in here before, and we had to clean the place out first before we could accept you guys here. We are going to start with a public hearing on 387 for about four reasons. We're going to start with that one. One, I think there's a lot of people here who want to testify. Two, I think the last time that Senator Farioli was here, I was not kind to him with respect to one, and so he left it to his one other person to take over his bill. And I didn't think he did justice to Senator Farioli's bill. He did it to himself, as he explained that he knew that Farioli would say that he was the best person to be speaking. But that being said, we're going to open the public hearing. I think I already did that. Senate 387. We'll have a short explanation from our administrator and Senator Farioli. You're welcome to come up to the table. And anybody you want to have with you, you can bring with you.
Okay. Chair Roland, members of the committee, Senate Bill 387 allows school districts that are self-insured or that have an independent health insurance trust to provide benefit plans other than those offered by the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. It repeals prohibition on districts leaving OEBB plans if they have ever participated.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing the hearing. Members of the committee, I know with a certainty that every single member of this committee wants every single dollar to go to program that they can possibly see go to program in our educational institutions. Senate Bill 387 is a permissive bill, and it would allow schools to opt out of the OEB program if they felt that they could achieve more efficient, less costly coverage for their employees, particularly with regard to selecting healthcare coverage that meets the needs of their employees provides that coverage at a cost savings to districts. When we built OEB, it was a mandatory program, and we had mighty debates in this building about whether or not some of the institutions would be able to do a bid process and come up with more efficacious coverage. We made a decision about that, but in the fullness of time, it's probably an opportunity for us to revisit that decision. I'm going to step aside and let the educators and administrators come and bring their stories to the committee, because I think those are far more informative. The bill is rather simple. It simply is an optional authority to opt out of the program if benefits can be documented. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for this?
Please, no questions.
I had something ready to go, but I guess I'll let it go. Thank you. So with that, let's start with, it looks like three people there together at the top of the page. Chuck Bennett, Terry Burton, and Richard Donovan. Come on up.
Okay.
Instead of...
That's okay.
Who did I say? Who was the other person I had said?
Chuck.
That's the... Oh, Terry Burton. That's right. Yes, everybody. It's all the right people. Do you want to be with your other group, or do you want to stay with this group? You're okay where you are. Okay.
I'm okay where I am.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I worry about you having this.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair Roebling, and the committee for letting us come here today to support this 387. I'm Terry Burton, Benefits Director at Portland Public Schools. I wanted you to know that it's our understanding that Portland Public Schools is one of only four districts in Oregon that has a split coverage, meaning that we have employees inside OEB and outside of OEB. This is essentially means that we have an existing insurance trust which covers the majority of our employees, as well as a small percentage of our employees covered by OEB. We are not allowed to simply move the OEB covered employees into trust coverage. This split coverage results in significant administrative duplication of tasks, essentially manage two suites of health care coverage plan offerings in separate systems. Duplication of efforts such as two open enrollments, two benefits fairs, two tracking programs add confusion and possible inequity of coverage for our employees. We have an average of 1,000 employees and retirees in OEB, which we believe is insignificant compared to OEB's 53,000 employees and retirees. In comparison, the PPS Trust covers 6,000 employees and retirees. SB 37 provides the flexibility for our district and a handful of others to move our employees under one coverage plan. You will see I've submitted attached documents comparing our health and pharmacy plans that had this bill been in place in 2010, the savings to our district and employees would have been significant. PPS would have saved approximately $15.5 million over a seven-year period. The calculated saving does not include dental and vision coverage, which we would expect savings there as well. This equates to $2.2 million on average, or the equivalent of 19 teacher positions. In addition to the above savings, the trust plan has less out-of-pocket expenses for employees, such as deductibles and co-pays and co-insurance and out-of-pocket maximums. Being partially in and out of OEB has created a house divided, as OEB members are resentful of the trust plans and the employees who are on the trust plan. Sorry, excuse me. There's another difficulty. Employees who move from one group to another are moving from one health plan to one back and forth, and it is confusing. We appreciate your consideration and thinking about allowing us to have the flexibility to opt out of OEB if we find that it benefits the district and our employees.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Ms. Chairman, we strongly support the bill. We have been in front of the legislature before on this issue, stretching back to before OEB became mandatory when we opposed that as well. We have continued to believe that our districts are the best judges of the insurance and the most cost-effective insurance for their employees, and found that over the past several years we are, and I won't even go into the specific districts or be glad to provide it to you, but over time we have consistently had districts year-round contacting us about being able to opt out of OEB and what they believe to be their ability to book better plans at less cost, or in some cases plans at less cost. Certainly there are parts of the state where we've had some real problems with the plans themselves. We think this is just a reasonable way to continue or to extend again the local management of local affairs at the school districts. And certainly if you wanted to continue to have some sort of state-level benefit board, those whose districts want to could certainly, if you allowed them, go into the state employee benefit board. You have other alternatives if you think pooling is at the state level is the correct answer. So appreciate the opportunity. We're glad Senator Ferrioli brought it to you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Richard Donovan on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, echoing kind of the sentiments of the people who testified before me. We think Portland is a great example of a district that has had an option and kind of is an example of somebody that's a district that's chosen and made a choice to the benefit of their members. In particular, OEB continues to be a point of contention for some of our more rural, kind of more remote districts. These districts find it difficult to find plans and services as part of their benefits packages that really fit the needs of their members. We're talking about members that have to drive tens of miles, sometimes, you know, kind of hundreds of miles round trip to just receive adequate care and access to services. And we think that given the option to look other places for benefit providers would perhaps save money and certainly make OEB sharpen their pencil a little bit. So with that, we'd all be happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Any questions for this group? Messina.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So next we'll go with Jared Mason Gear and Taylor Shipman. Taylor Shipman.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Tyler Shipman. I am a government relations specialist for the Oregon School Employees Association. Our association represents over 21,000 education employees across the state of Oregon, and this includes employees in over 130 school districts. I'm here today in opposition of Senate Bill 387. I think one of the biggest issues that this bill would cause is allowing districts to get out of OEBB and actually shrinking the pool. Therefore, it would increase the cost of those that are left in the pool. One serious issue that we've raised is that we think this will really create an inequality among health insurance between districts. Not all districts are going to be able to go out and get a better deal on the private market. I think one of the biggest issues with this is that larger districts are going to be much more successful in finding those better cost plans. We're worried that this is going to leave more rural school districts with less employees, unable to get a good deal, still be in OEB, and have that higher cost. This is also really important, too, because most rural districts pay less than metro districts. Just to give you a little illustration of our membership, we represent many low-wage workers. The average salary of our membership is only about a little over $24,000. Health insurance and being able to afford is extremely important to our members. Most members work possibly only part-time. At the end of every month, they'll actually cut the district a check to be able to maintain their health insurance because they receive only a prorated benefit amount from the district. For full-time workers, most districts have a cap in place that says that limits how much that district is willing to spend on that employee that's negotiated through the collective bargaining agreement. Of course, if members are leaving the pool and the costs increase, our members are left paying more out of pocket. While we support ways to increase the quality of health insurance or lower the costs to our members, we just feel that this legislation isn't the best way to get there.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jared Mason Gear. I represent the Oregon Education Association and 44,000 educators around the state, all of whom are members of OEB. OEB has 150,000 members between those that we represent, those that OSEA represents, community college members represented by AFT Oregon, and then municipal workers represented by AFSCME. I think you will see, although not all representatives are here today, you will see that we are all united in opposition to this bill. In 2007, 10 years ago, the legislature created OEB at OEA's urging to get at a problem. The problem was that districts around the state were going out for insurance on their own. They're having a hard time getting good deals, and they're having a hard time providing good quality plans at an affordable rate for their members. OEB has solved that problem. The legislature has another problem that they're addressing here this session, which is that we face a nearly $2 billion budget shortfall. I know the legislature's grappling with a whole host of solutions to that. It's for that reason I find the discussion of this bill somewhat ironic, because this is going to have the impact of driving up costs for those districts that OEB serves and for OEB itself. We've done some preliminary analysis. We're still working on doing all of the numbers. I mean, certainly there's just the basic common sense principle, which is that a larger pool equates to more leverage, better purchasing power, and therefore more quality plans and lower costs. So that's sort of philosophical. We've actually done some analysis and looked at a couple of different potential scenarios, which are what if 10% of current OEB members left, and what impact would that have on remaining OEB members. We've looked at a couple of other smaller scenarios, assuming that more would stay in, 5% or 3%. At 5%, so if 10% left, you would see about a 3% increase in OEB's cost, which equates to about $1 million around the system, equates to about $16 per month for an OEB member. So any given educator around the state will see a $16 increase in their health, in the cost of their health care. If you were to shrink that to a 5% loss of enrollment in OEB, loss of membership in OEB, you'd be looking at about a 1.5% increase in costs. So I think there's a basic question there, which is, do you give some districts the ability to go out at the expense of other districts? There's also some real uncertainty about what the impacts would be for those districts that did go out. So, for example, when a private broker is offering insurance to a district, at the time that they're in OEB, they're going to be offering them insurance quotes based on the demographics of that bargaining unit or that membership that is represented. That will last for approximately 2 years, and then they'll be offering quotes and they'll offering service prices based on the actual experience. And so they may have made a quote based on the age and general assumed health of a membership over the course of time, and they see what utilization has actually been like. That could change. So there's a potential that they could save some money, but there's also the potential that they would see their costs increase dramatically. We've also looked at some of the claims and testimony that have been made by some of the districts that are urging this move, Corvallis School district being one of those. I think it's important to point out that the plan that they use as their measure to show the savings that they would achieve is the very richest plan that is offered in the selection of OEB offerings. And it's a plan that only 14% of OEB members select. And so the cost savings are based on the fact that they're choosing a very expensive plan. When you look at plans that people actually utilize, 45% of members would actually see a dramatic increase in their costs. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be really concerned about this legislation, both for the impact on OEB as a whole, on the members that would continue to be represented by OEB, and then on those districts and the members that are represented by those that would exit OEB. I have requested some actuarial analysis that would look at what would OEB costs do if we were to add more members in. So, for example, right now we know that there are some of the districts that have already that are addressing you that have members in and out of OEB. There are districts that were allowed to opt out from the very outset. So districts like Portland Public, with about 3,000 represented certified educators, Beaverton School District, Springfield School District, pretty large school districts that are largely a little bit younger and more urban than the general population of educators. We're trying to get some numbers on what would happen to OEB rates and the rates that members pay if we were to increase them, if we were to add those members back in. I mean, we could see what would happen if we took members out of the pool. If we add people in, I think it would be safe to assume that the rates would go down. So assuming that I get numbers back that reflect that, I think what I would urge would you'd actually amend this bill to force those districts to come into OEB, and we would see costs go down for everybody. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up on the comment that you'd made about Corvallis. I know that we in Corvallis have historically had a very good benefit package. I was on the school board there and was here in 2007 when we implemented OEB. It was a really difficult vote for me. I voted for it. Spent a lot of time talking to my district and said I would come back if our district lost money under that, which it has. So I recognize that the OEB Birch Plan is a rich plan, but if they dropped that down, the classified staff and administrators would have a lesser benefit than their colleagues who are licensed teaching staff. So are you arguing that in order to realize the savings that's equivalent to 20 teachers a year in Corvallis, that our classified staff should have a less rich benefit than our teaching staff?
Chair Roland, Senator Gelser, I'm not certain I understand the question as
okay,
far as...
Okay, let me ask it in a different way. So we're a district that's in and out, and when you're putting your benefits together, you want to have some equity across all of your employees. So the OEB plan that is purchased, this OEB Birch plan, is equivalent in the benefit level to what is offered to the employees that are out. And when we went to OEB, the whole idea was you had to get a package that was equal to or greater than in terms of the level of benefit to what you had offered before. So at the time that we went to OEB, Corvallis had a relatively rich benefit package. So they needed to, I mean, even if they hadn't needed to by the law, I mean, I certainly would have been disappointed in my district if they had gone and said, well, we're gonna increase your deductible and we're gonna decrease your services. So right now, yes, you made the argument that the savings is based on, you know, this is a plan that only 14% of the districts have, but that maintains the level of benefit that they were offering prior to OEB. And if they were to buy a less expensive plan from OEB, our classified staff and administrators who are in OEB would have a less generous benefits package than our licensed teaching staff that are outside of OEB. And the savings, I mean, just to give you a sense of the savings in Corvallis over 6 years, over the last 6 years, it's been a total savings of $9 million if we could come out, or the equivalent of 20 teachers per year that we could put back in our classrooms. And at the same time, for the employee themselves, the benefit itself is different. So for instance, in my district, my teachers who are not in OEB, their deductible is $500. For our classified staff who make a lot less money that are in OEB, their deductible is $800. The out-of-pocket maximum for my teachers who are out of OEB is $2,500 in-network, $4,500 out-of-network. For the OEB classified staff that are in OEB, it's $4,000 and $8,000, maxing out at $24,000 for a family out-of-pocket maximum, and I don't know any classified staff that could afford that. So I appreciate the issue of an increase in 1.5%, but it just seems like the classified staff in Corvallis are giving up an awful lot in terms of what they are paying out of pocket, and the kids in Corvallis are giving up an awful lot if they could have 20 additional teachers, if everybody could be covered by the same plan. And it's not what I promised my district that I would make sure happened for them when I voted for OEB in 2007. I was told there wouldn't be winners and losers, that Corvallis wouldn't lose. Corvallis said, we're going to be a loser because we have rich benefits. And that's what's happening. And that's why I think this is important, because for the kids in my district, they need those teachers. And my classified staff, none of them can afford a $24,000 out-of-pocket maximum for their family if they're hit with a major catastrophe, which would be $5,000 if they were not in OEB.
Chair Robin, Senator Gelser, thanks for that explanation. I think still kind of digging into some of the assumptions that are embedded in some of the testimony, I think, and I'll come follow up with you so we can dig into this a little bit more specific. I think that the places where I think there is some disconnect, I think using just single plans as examples is problematic. You know, and I'd have to look at what the actual terms of the collective bargaining agreement are for that classified unit. Typically, our members are so there are nine plan offerings through OEB. Typically, our collective bargaining units in negotiation with the school district are then selecting three or four or five of those plans that they have access to. So I'd have to go actually look and see what the specifics are of those plan offerings for that collective bargaining agreement. My suspicion is that there are more options and a bit more variation in the types of plans than just the one, just those examples that have been cited by the district.
Okay, well, let me know. It's just not, may I follow up?
Sure, yes.
It hasn't been my experience that my school district has misled me in the past.
Chair Rowland and Senator Gelser, I'm to be very clear, I'm absolutely not insinuating that anybody is misleading anybody. I think that there are more complexities here, and there are potentially more variations in the plans that we need to look at. I want to be really clear about that.
And that would be great to follow up here. I would also like the opportunity later to make sure that we're following up on the record so that everybody has the ability
we
to
have
know
a
what that
person from Corvallis here.
Perfect. Thanks.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peg Honyak and Remy
Kalalang.
Kalalang, okay. That's easier than I thought. I was making it much too hard for myself.
Hello, and thank you very much. My name is Peg Honyak, and I, along with Tim Hennessy, are consultants for both Corvallis School District and Lincoln County School District. And we really appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to this. So would you like me to make our statement first or answer the couple of questions
make
that
your
just
statement
came
first
up?
And we'll go back. Sarah might have a
okay.
Senator Gelser may have another question for you anyway.
Okay. All right. Okay. And you have, does everyone have a copy of our testimony? And we emailed it. Okay. So I'm just going to read from that. And then if you have follow-up questions, happy to answer those.
And you don't have to read the whole thing if you don't. I mean, make sure we get the highlights. We'll also.
Okay. I tried to be brief.
Okay. That's perfect.
So Corvallis School District is one of the four known districts in Oregon that are both in and out of OEB due to demonstrated cost savings. And interestingly enough, the percentages, since that has been brought up, are the four groups represent 3.9% of the overall population. So that kind of puts it into a perspective. Our district is split between non-OEB, licensed and certified staff of 316 active and 54 retirees, and the OEB population, which is classified in administrative staff of 312 active and 31 retirees. For the time period of 2010 through 2016, we have a documented savings of almost $9 million. See attachment one. Note, this is for medical only and does not include the savings of dental, vision, life, and disability. And this was a statement that the Director of Finance and Operations asked that I read. The annual savings equates to about 22 teachers. The combined savings, nearly $9 million, is enough to fund the construction of a new elementary school. Realistically, not all of the savings would belong to the school district, since our employees pay a portion of their premium. A portion of the savings would likely have gone back to them as well, resulting in lower employee out-of-costs over the years. The result of this split essentially requires the district to duplicate the entire process, including separate complex cost accounting systems, informational sessions, and open enrollment materials. The two tracks lead to confusion among employees, not to mention an inequitable benefit package. Finally, when we compare the benefits of the plan, it is clear that the employees who are outside of OEB have a much lower out-of-pocket expense, lower deductibles, lower copayments, coinsurance, and out-of-pocket maximums. Simply put, they have better benefits. See attachment two. As is demonstrated in attachment two, if we had been able to move our classified and administrative staff to the current plan that the teachers are on, an additional $1.5 million would have been saved this year. For these reasons, we ask for your consideration and support of Senate Bill 387.
Okay. We'll have both first.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Roblin, committee. My name is Remy Kelling. I'm the HR director in Bethel School District in West Eugene. So I'm just going to give you some numbers that explain what's the impact of this bill in Bethel. And we're one of the four districts who are in and out. We have 343 active employees who are out of OEB, and that's our teachers and administrators. And then we have 306 active employees who are in OEB. So just to give you some idea, the last 2 years, we've estimated about $5 million savings being out of OEB. That's 50 teachers for us. That's 29 school days. Those savings, we've been able to retain those general fund dollars and preserve programs and services, and then reduce costs for out-of-pocket costs for our employees. Additionally, by being out of OEB, at least for part of our district, we've been able to negotiate rates directly with insurance companies that have resulted in other savings. For instance, in 2014-15, we got a refund back from our insurance company because our utilization rates could demonstrate that we're so low, and they gave us a rebate. And then also for the 2015 school year, 15-16 school year, our out-of-OEB rates decreased 4%, while our in-OEB rates increased by 10%. And so for us, we see that inequity with our staff. We are creating a two-tiered system, and that lower-tiered system impacts our employees who are the least compensated in our district. And they do ask, when we bargain, they do ask me, can we get out of OEB? And that's something that I find that I need to be responsive to, and I hope you do consider their voices as you consider support for 387. Thank you.
Yeah. Any questions? Or did she answer?
Well, I think, may I?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you talk a little bit about the question that was raised? Are there multiple plans that are used by by different people? Can you address
yes.
whether we're making the right
Yes. So the teachers, the certified class, certified licensed staff at Corvallis School District have three benefit plans to choose from. We used the middle of the road one for this example, thinking that there's going to be some people that would pick the richer plan, which is a $200 deductible, which is not even available on OWEB, and a $1,500, which is a health savings account. So for this illustration, in estimating what the potential savings would be, we picked A, the plan that was in the middle of the road, and also the one that most of the teachers are on. So that's why we selected that.
And what about for, I'll follow up. And what about for the classified and administrators in the OWEB plan?
They have access. They have voted to have all options to all of the. So they have 9 options. That is accurate.
And would it be? Can you get us a spreadsheet that shows how many are on which option and just kind of similar laying
for classified?
To get to the level of complexity of detail that was talked about on the last that Jared
sure.
was talking about in the last mm-hmm. panel to compare. And then one more follow up.
Yep.
So the savings that's on attachment 2, permission to use visual aid.
Absolutely.
Thank you. How precise is it? So to the argument before that it might be more complex to that than that, are the majority of your OWEB folks on this Birch plan? Part some of them.
Well, it is complex because there's really 2 parts to it. The Birch plan that we showed is the PPO statewide, which is the open. I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but it is the most comparable to what the teachers are on. That it's a very open and robust. There's no requirement for referrals or a medical home, or it just really. So, are there cheaper plans that we could compare it to within the OWEB? Absolutely. But if we're wanting to compare apples to apples, with regards to who you can see at the doctor level, that's why we chose that one.
And one more follow-up?
Yeah.
So I'm on PEB, mm-hmm. like all the rest of us on the table, and there's several options in PEB. I can only choose one of them because only one of them has providers that operate anywhere near me. Is that similar? So are the 9 options in OWEB, do they all have robust panels in Corvallis, or is it like in PEB, well, I could choose this other plan, but to do that, I would have to go to the doctor in Salem or Eugene?
It is one carrier, Moda, and there's 2 networks. So there's the Synergy network, which is the smaller, and then there is the PPO statewide, which is the larger of the networks. And so the benefit plans are the exact same under both of the networks. So it's really not 9 benefit plans. It's really the same benefit plan with 2 different network options. So I can provide you the information.
Thank you. And mm-hmm. one more follow-up?
One more follow-up.
Thank you. And this is a follow-up. We talked about this in Ways and Means a couple weeks ago, and you and I have talked about this a little bit. Moda is the sole source. It's all Moda?
For Corvallis, that's
for
correct.
So
in other parts of the state, there Kaiser is an option as well.
And then were you, sorry, I guess I did have another one.
I figured you probably did.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Senator Gelser.
She has lots of questions. What was, so when that's being negotiated, the RFP goes out for OWEB, is the district that's being served by that engaged in that process in terms of selecting a benefit carrier that is acceptable, interesting, trustworthy, to the school district that is going to be buying into it?
The RFP process is done by the OEB, OEBB board. So to the best of my knowledge, there are no teachers or classified staff on the board at this point in time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll end with Mark Freed from ODE and Kathy Lawrence from OEBB. Oh, sorry about that.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Kathy Loretz. I'm the director of the Oregon Educators Benefit Board and also the Public Employees Benefit Board. Thank you so much for having me here today. PEB and OWEB.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Most of you know that OWEB was created in 2007 by Senate Bill 426. Prior to that legislation, school districts, ESDs, community colleges were all required to purchase their own medical, dental, and vision plans directly from either the OSBA, Oregon School Board Association, or from the Oregon Educators Association, OEA pools. Plan pricing and premiums, along with limited competition and plan choice, resulted in a lot of instability, especially for the smaller districts. OEB was created to pool purchasing power and help provide educational entities with a choice of high-quality, affordable health plans. Senate Bill 426 included the option for districts to initially opt out of OEB if they could show through annual comparability analyses that savings could be achieved if they did so. In 2008, OEB began offering plans to 220 educational entities with an initial enrollment of 145-plus people. Plan offerings included 25 medical and pharmacy plans, 24 dental plans, and multiple vision plans. In the beginning, we were required to offer plans that were comparable to all the districts that were coming in, so we had a lot. OEB continues to offer a suite of medical and pharmacy dental vision plans that vary based on plan type. We have PPOs, we have an HMO, we have coordinated care model plans, and we also have high deductible health plans available. So there's a variety of costs and networks available to our members. In 2013, legislation was passed to allow cities, counties, and other municipalities to join. We currently have a couple of counties and three other types of municipalities that have joined our ranks. OEB has consistently achieved premium rates below trend in Oregon, including keeping per employee per month rates below the 3.4% cap for allowable inflationary growth over the past several years. In its first 3 years, OEB saved an estimated total of $125 million in premium costs for medical, dental, and vision plans. OEB has always also been able to negotiate fixed administrative costs for some of their plans. OEB uses its position as plan sponsor to identify and negotiate plans and services. This process begins with a request for proposals to procure vendors for all of our benefits. From the selected vendors, contracts are negotiated, and then we renegotiate these contracts on an annual basis. Fully insured plans submit rates for the following year, and they include any new requirements. The board and PEB and OEB staff, with assistance from our consultants, negotiate with individual plans to secure favorable rates based on the cost of services and member utilization. As needed to help control and stabilize rates, plans are added or subtracted. Last year, we took out a couple of plans and reduced the number of plans available. And plan design changes are made. Final plan designs and rates are reviewed and approved by the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. OEB continues to use its purchasing power to negotiate for value-based benefits that help members improve their health and help bend the cost curve. And this includes low costs for effective treatments for primary care visits, chronic care visits, and we also have a large, what we call a value-based drug list that is at no cost to members. OEB has also included coordinated care model plans recently for its members and included wellness programs. We have a Healthy Futures wellness program that we offer for our members, Weight Watchers, Healthy Team, Healthy You, which is a team-based worksite wellness program. We have virtual lifestyle management, which is a diabetes prevention program. Better Choices, Better Health, which is a chronic disease self-management program. And then we have Mood Helper, which is a depression self-management program. As currently structured, OEB is designed to enable it to ensure a sizable and stable risk pool that strengthens and secures the board's ability to negotiate and maintain affordable rates and plan choice for members. Allowing entities to exit and enter OEB as proposed in Senate Bill 387 would negatively impact the board's position in a number of ways. First, it would create the possibility of adverse selection, whereby an entity could be incented to join or leave OEB based on the health of its covered population at the time. It would destabilize the board's ability to negotiate low or fixed administrative rates, and it would hamper the ability for the board to leverage the pool size to negotiate wide plan choice and additional benefits at an affordable cost. It is estimated that If enacted, Senate Bill 387 would result in a 7% to 9% increase in medical, dental, or vision premium rates in the first year, with the potential of additional increases in the following year. At a 9% increase, this would amount to approximately $137 million in premium costs over the biennium, or $106 per employee per month. Thank you very much. I'd entertain some questions.
Yeah. Do you have a question, Sarah?
I know this will surprise you, but I do.
Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up. So we talked a little bit last week in Ways and Means about the issue of MOTA not having the AM Best rating and people really wanting better access to what that vetting process was, how the board determined that it was safe and appropriate to put my district into that plan. And at that time, you had said you could get information to us within about a week, and it's been about a week. Is that available?
Yes, it should have been.
Okay.
If you have not received that.
I have not received that. And that, can you speak to that a little bit, please?
Sure. Senator Roblin, members of the committee. When we do an RFP, it's an open process. The design of it is in an open board meetings. The members of the people that purchase through us, our membership, are represented on the board through their unions. We have OSEA, OEA. We also have school board members. We have administrators on there, and we also have a couple of policy experts. So that's how we get input from our membership, is through their the groups that they're in. Everything is done in an open meeting. And as far as MOTA's actual rating, we did meet with DOJ around that, and it was determined that their current rating was nothing that we should be afraid of, and that if they were the choice, we could go ahead and move forward with them.
And
follow up.
Is there an ability to see, because I understand that there were about 4,000 points available in the scoring process. Is it possible to get the documents that show the scoring for each of the providers that offered that? And then following up to that, what is the response of OEB to have basically a customer district that is deeply concerned about the provider they were stuck with?
Chair Roblin, Senator Gelser, members of the committee. So, yes, that was one of the documents that you should receive. So I'll get that to you. We have a document that shows the RFP was scored based on the triple aim, was broken down into quality, cost, and healthcare, cost, quality, and access. So, yes, that's all in there. We can get that to you. And again, a school district's input is received, I guess, through their members. If they're unhappy with MOTA, I don't have any. That is the only statewide vendor that we currently contract with. In the Corvallis area, I believe Kaiser is available, but that would be the only other option.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. I think this is another reason why this is a problem for my district. I mean, Kaiser doesn't cover Corvallis. You would have to travel to Salem. And I think I can understand the concern of the district that not only are they paying more money, they are kind of stuck with a provider that's been in the news for being relatively unstable. And it just seems like a lot for my district to give up if we could just let them out and cover all of their employees in the same way, since they do have people in and out. And I assume it's a similar situation for Lincoln and Bethel and the very small number of individuals in the Portland Public School District that are in OEB as well. So, I mean, even if we could just let these four out, I think it would be to the good of the students in that district and the employees that are paying more for something a little less.
Okay. That is your opinion.
That is my opinion.
We appreciate that.
Okay.
I guess my question, since this program became the program after I left education, but mm-hmm. I will tell you that as a negotiator, both on the teachers and administrators, the previous 15 years in the healthcare stuff, between 1990 to 2005, 2005,
healthcare costs were astronomically going all over the place, and they were double digits up and down, and it was becoming one of the big concerns in most districts what they were going to do and how they were going to meet the needs of their the people in their programs. Since we have put this program in place, have we met that requirement of keeping it at 3.5, or has it led to more and more costs being driven down to the employee? Do you know the answer to that question?
Senator Rowland, yes, we have our per member, our composite rate per member per month, we have been able to keep that between 3.4%. Some of that is due to members moving to either a lower cost, a smaller network such as Synergy or Summit in the MOTA plan. Some of it is because members are moving to higher deductible plans, and some of it is because we are just keeping our costs down. We have a very large pool, so we are pretty stable, and that helps us keep our rates more stable as we move forward.
So I hear at least these three districts saying, or four districts, three here today of the four. I hear them saying that in their particular cases, a lot of money would be saved. Do we ever look at that and see what's going on and how is it possible? Because we have, OEB has more people in it than any of those districts. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not Portland. How many people are there totally in OEB right now covered?
About 150,000 lives, okay, so not employees, but lives.
Right. Lives, okay, which is probably larger than any of the other districts for sure. And if they're getting policies that are cheaper, how are we not using the size of our people to get rates that are comparable or less?
Senator Roblin, without knowing their utilization, I think that one of the things that OEB offers is protection for small school districts that come in. A small school district could have a single person in their pool that could push their rates up the next year to be completely unaffordable. So that's the plus and the minus, I guess, of being in a pool, is that you do have protection when things go bad. If you are one of if you're on the good side, then maybe that year's not for you. You know, you're subsidizing someone else. But that is the good and the bad of being in a big pool, is that we do offer protection for some of the people that have bad utilization and bad health outcomes.
Yeah, and I know that to be true. I was on the board of water board, and we had a bad year, and that created a lot of problems. We were with another group, just our hospital, so it wasn't a huge group, but if you get a few cancer cases and a couple other things, all of a sudden your rates fluctuate fairly high. Okay. Any other questions for?
May I ask a clarification on your question? So your question was, before that, the question before that, has the rate been maintained to the goal without pushing that cost onto employees? But your answer was some of it was holding down rates, but some of it was because people had moved to higher deductibles and smaller networks. Aren't higher deductibles and smaller networks a way of passing that cost on to employees? They're either agreeing to get less or pay more?
Senator Roblin, Senator Gelser, yes, that's true. And we believe that that is most likely driven more not from the amount of contribution from the school district has gone down. So members are self-selecting whatever they need to for their own personal budgets. But yes, you are correct. The answer to you is correct.
And follow up, because that answer isn't matching for me, because your question was, are you meeting the goal of meeting the rate? If to meet the rate, employees are having to pay more, I think that's a different answer to your question, unless I'm understanding it a different way. If OEB was able to maintain the rate at that cap without employees having to give up benefits or pay more money, that would be one thing. But it sounds like as part of in order to get there, the employees are needing to make a sacrifice in terms of paying more in their deductible or giving up the flexibility or services within the plan.
I understand what you're saying. I understood that from what her answer was.
Okay.
My issue is more about cost containment and other kinds of things. One of the issues that we are really looking at with respect to everything this session are different ways, revenue, cost containment, all of those different kinds of things. From the perspective of the way the board is handling it, they are continuing to meet a cost containment goal, even if it is pushed one way or the other. So that's where I look at it, too.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? And thank you for being here. And I know if people have questions, they'll probably get a hold of you.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That is everybody who signed up. Is there anybody that was sitting out there that can't contain themselves and want to come up and testify? I see no one. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 387 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 420. And we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 420, as the Dash 1 amendment is written, replaces the measure. It directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to establish rules for reimbursing resident students for tuition spent on upper division mathematics courses at public universities under certain circumstances. It requires reimbursements to be made by public universities by direct payment or by credit against the student's tuition for a succeeding term of enrollment. The bill establishes the task force on creating incentives for mathematics teaching in Oregon and specifies the task force's membership. It requires the task force to submit a report to an interim legislative committee by September 15th, 2018, and then repeals the task force on December 31st, 2018. The bill takes effect 91 days after signing it.
Did you want to speak to this one? Or do you want to bring the people up?
No, no, no. I won't go down there, nor will I read my testimony into the microphone, even though I know how much you guys enjoy that when people do that. I know there's some people coming up here, and I'll get out of the way. But this is a bill that this committee is familiar with, and it came out of discussions with technology professionals concerned about education and access and about the workforce. And along the line came up a question of what if someone could major in math and have their tuition waived. And it was a very intriguing question, and it answers some of those issues, and it goes to the heart of the problem, that is that Oregon, and frankly this country, doesn't do a great job of graduating math majors or math-related degrees. And in fact, a lot of our technology companies in Washington County and the state import employees, not just from out of Oregon, but from out of the country. And so we voted, I think everybody except for Senator Linthicum, who wasn't here, to have HEC study this issue. And they came back with some very pragmatic ideas and an excellent report. And and much of it is in the Dash 1 amendment here. I've always seen math as kind of an instrument of torture. But they've convinced me that it actually can be a building block of understanding. There's actually research that shows that math majors, in addition to making good computer engineers and the like, also make good lawyers and doctors and business professionals because of the discipline study of figuring things out and answering equations. So this bill just seeks to go after this policy. And we are a policy committee and therefore appropriate to look at this. I'm not delusional about the expense, and I know the Ways and Means guys will take a look at this harder, but I think it's important for us to understand that should we do this, it would send a loud message far and wide about Oregon's focus on math and academics. And I think it's an important economic development consideration when you look at, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, math-related degrees result in jobs that pay three times the median income. So, and finally, along with the themes that we've been trying to push on this committee, it will help with access. Finances are still the number one obstacle for young people trying to get through a university. So my hope is this would help make college more affordable for students who see a future built on the building blocks of mathematics. My motto is always degrees, not debt, and I think this takes us one step closer.
Thank you very much. So we'll have Sean Pollock, Mark Fried, and Mark Lewis all come up. And while they're coming up, I really do appreciate the fact that they have picked on math, having been a math major and enjoying that subject. And I also think it's a little bit like foreign languages, people that have multiple languages seem to do better. And math is really just another language, so it fits into that same category, in my opinion. So with that, here we go.
Foreign language credit.
Yeah, and we should get foreign language credit back. I had a lot of my foreign language teachers would have agreed with that if they, you know, if we had to give them a math test.
Thank you, Chair Roland. Thank you, members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Sean Pollock, and I'm an academic policy specialist with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission in the Office of University Coordination. There are several public policy and education goals that are advanced by this bill. As Senator Haas noted, math studies foundational to many of the STEM and technical fields that will see increased employment in the near future in Oregon and nationwide. And Senate Bill 420 is an outgrowth of Senate Bill 1540 from the 2016 session. And that bill asked HEC to estimate the cost for a tuition waiver for math majors at Oregon's public universities. So a work group of experts, stakeholders, and HEC staff reviewed some of the existing research and data on math degree production and some national research on major choice and the connection between course taking in middle school and high school and the pathway into the mathematics major and STEM fields more generally. So we found that the math bachelor's degrees in Oregon are about 1.4% of the total degrees produced over the period of 2010 to 2015 statewide. And about, interestingly, about 32% of Oregon resident math degree completers are transfer students who bring 45 or more credits from an Oregon community college. We also learned that math degree completers are less diverse than the university student population or the population of graduates as a whole over that same period of time, 2010 to 2015. I'm sorry, I wanted to call your attention to the slide. And I promise I have only two. This slide here that shows that approximately 79% of math bachelor's degree completers are white, and that compares with approximately 63 to 68% of the university bachelor's degree completing population as a whole over the period on this slide, 2010 to 2015. What's also not reflected on this slide is that over this period, about 66% of math bachelor's degree completers are male, and that 34% are female. That compares with 47% of the general degree completing population as being male. The report recommended, the report on Senate Bill 1540 recommended that any tuition subsidy for math majors be confined to the upper division math courses, that is typically 300 to 400 level courses, and these are the courses typically taken in the last 2 years of study, and as is spelled out in Senate Bill 420. So in trying to come up with a cost estimate, we used a weighted average of in-state tuition and came up with a rough cost estimate of about $1.3 million for the first year if we were to subsidize upper division math courses covering approximately 150 students per year, and that works out to an average of about 45 credit hours per math degree produced. So I want to emphasize again that this is a very rough cost estimate. It's for the first year only, and it doesn't take into account, you know, likely tuition increases over time, nor perhaps increased demand for upper division mathematics courses, and it doesn't factor in possible administrative costs related to such a tuition subsidy or waiver. In addition to this cost estimate, our work group, and there are two members of that work group here with us, our work group made note of several other factors that affect math degree attainment. One is the lack of diversity that we just noted a moment ago. And that should be one of the focuses of any state-level intervention and a program for math majors. And institutions and math departments across the state are aware of this, and they recognize the need to attract and retain and support female and underrepresented minority students in mathematics. And those efforts could be supported along with tuition. And of course, any bill or program to increase math degree production should look at the whole math education pipeline from a middle school through high school, community colleges, and the public universities. So if we're seeking to measurably increase the number of math degrees, we should be looking at math instruction across the education continuum. And Section 2 of Senate Bill 420 creates a task force on creating incentives for mathematics teaching in Oregon for that express purpose. So I thank you, Chair Roebling, and the committee members, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roebling, and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Mark Fried, and I'm a math education specialist at the Oregon Department of Education. And I'd just like to speak a little bit more about one of the recommendations from the Senate Bill 1540 Committee about the mathematics pipeline and the importance of not only getting students to finish, cross the finish line, get a math major, but developing the K-12 system and developing our students to be prepared for success after they graduate in either mathematics or STEM-related fields. A significant challenge facing our K-12 system is not only to raise our student achievement in mathematics, but also we need to develop our students' identity in mathematics, their positive identity that they could do mathematics and choose to pursue those fields, and how that's developed throughout the K-12 continuum is a continuing challenge for all of our teachers. And to do this, we need to support our teachers. And one of the needs we noticed in our committee was the persistent shortage of teachers with advanced mathematics degrees in our state. And this is particularly evident in our small and rural school districts. And one of the highest rates of provisional licenses by the TSPC, Standards and Teaching Standards Practice Commission, is within the area of advanced mathematics. And so a lot of districts are dealing with attracting and retaining advanced math teachers. So Section 2 establishes the task force for creating incentives for mathematics teaching for that purpose to identify and address these needs, which is really a critical component of any part of this work. So working to support high quality math instruction at both the secondary and post-secondary level will play a critical role in helping students choose mathematics majors and advance endorsements in mathematics in our state.
Thank you.
Chair Roebling, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Mark Lewis. I am the STEM and CTE Policy Director for the Chief Education Office and was also a member of the Senate Bill 1540 Work Group. It's my pleasure to be here with you today and provide some additional context for your consideration around Senate Bill 420. First, I'd like to thank Senator Haas for his ongoing support and commitment to improved outcomes in mathematics, including increased degree attainment. And as this committee knows, competency and confidence in mathematics is really essential to the vast majority of high-wage, high-demand jobs that drive and fuel our economy here in Oregon. In fact, the Oregon Talent Council produced a fantastic Oregon Talent Plan recently, and 9 of the 10 critical career occupational clusters are heavily dependent on mathematical literacy, reasoning, analytical ability. In addition to that, increasingly mathematics has a prominent influence on all aspects of our lives, whether it's about analyzing your DNA and your genome and getting the probability of potential health factors, or whether it's the algorithms that you use when you're searching Google, or whether you're trying to figure out the best traffic pattern to get home with in the least amount of time. However, as the work group discussed and has been brought up here, math is arguably the single largest academic factor that's a barrier for students on their pathway to a successful career, and not only in STEM fields. It's whether your students are trying to earn the necessary credits to graduate from high school, whether they're pursuing an apprenticeship as an electrician, or whether they're planning on becoming a nurse practitioner. How they do in math class often determines whether opportunities open for them or whether barriers are placed in their way. And as we know from some studies, that over 64% of high school students high school graduates going on to community college directly have to take remedial mathematics, and that has been a place that has been characterized where dreams go to die. Not many people get out of that remedial mathematics those programs, particularly if they have to take more than one remedial mathematics class. That's why improving mathematical experiences across the board is a priority of the STEM Investment Council and is a priority noted in the in Oregon's STEM Education Plan. And it's also should be noted that it was a priority action item last year when the State Board of Education and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission had a joint board meeting. That topic continues to come up. But it's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of great things happening in the state amongst mathematics educators who are trying hard to stop the mathematical trauma that often takes place and to excite and engage students in a way that gets them interested in understanding the power and the beauty of mathematics, as some of you might know. And for far too many people, they don't understand the power and the beauty of mathematics. What they get instead is a high heart rate, and they start sweating when they're faced by mathematics. But I want to point out one of the current STEM investments this biennium that was recommended by the STEM Investment Council and is being led by Mark Fried and Tom Thompson at the Department of Education called Math in Real Life. And that's a program, and Mark can speak more directly to it, but it's a program that's really working with clusters of math educators across the state to really tie how they teach mathematics to issues in their community to help those things come alive for their students. And just a couple of examples. In Ontario, students are using quadcopters to get a sense of crop yields and determine the amount of seed needed to seed a field. In Lane County, it's very exciting where students are using linear functions to investigate matters of racial diversity and trends in their communities, and they're seeing some really interesting patterns. Throughout the project, what I'm increasingly hearing is that teachers are really excited and their students are really excited, and they're saying we'll never go back to the same way of teaching mathematics again. So that's, for me as a former math educator and really one who tried to make it project-based and applied, it's really exciting to see those kinds of changes taking off. So as the committee considers this bill, I want to encourage you to also think about ways that that task force could explore not just increasing the number of qualified mathematics educators, but increasing the quality of mathematics preparation programs, as well as ongoing professional support for educators in the field so that they can help students connect to the math in the real life around them. No student should ever have to ask, when am I ever going to need to use this? Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for these three?
Well, just a comment.
Senator Cruz.
I didn't enjoy trigonometry. and that was in high school. But what I really didn't enjoy was economic statistics, okay? And I swore I would never use the standard deviation again for my entire life. I just thought I'd put that out.
And have you?
I try to avoid it, but you can't avoid it always, so.
And there's a really amazing book. I don't know if you guys have looked at the Mathematics of Human Endeavor. It's an older text. It was funny, my sister, when she was going to college, did not like math, and she was in this education math class, and they brought this book, and she came home, my older brother, and she said, this is really great math, and it was really a great book. I actually used it for a couple of classes that I had, because the first chapter is all about the mathematics of pool, and then it goes into whole lots of other kinds of things, which excited her, and all of a sudden she started thinking she liked math, when in fact, as I had told her, really they aren't teaching you anything new. It's just the way they've presented it is so new
exactly. That
it's really important to you. And you're going to go excited and start teaching that to elementary kids that way. And that is not really necessarily helpful because you had a lot of background before you got to this book. They need to have some of the basics as well. And I hope that we continue to work with all of our teachers to help them understand and give the background to kids that they need early on so they don't get messed up later. With that,
absolutely.
Thank you all for
thank
being
you.
Here. And we have two more people.
Mr. Chair,
I just
want to thank these guys for
yes. Their
work on the work group. Great work. Thank you.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Senator Hess, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Jim Craven and Skip Newberry.
Card counting and blackjack.
Yeah. There's some ciphering on the phone.
Great. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Skip Newberry, President and CEO of the Technology Association of Oregon. Sorry. Thanks. I always lean too close.
Yeah.
So I'm providing testimony on behalf of TAO in support of SB 420. We're supportive of the bill for a number of reasons, but today I wanted to talk a bit about the economic development outcomes that I think are exciting for the tech industry and also the concern for equity. So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, over the next 7 years, computer and mathematical occupations are projected to grow at a rate that's more than double all of the other job occupation categories during that same period. And mathematics really provides the foundation for many of the high-growth technology and engineering jobs in this state. In the past 5 years, the tech industry in Oregon has added over 20,000 net new jobs, and it's grown more than 10% each of those past 5 years. Two of the fastest-growing occupations are cybersecurity professionals and computer programmers. And additionally, smart devices are increasingly more and more ubiquitous. We have lots and lots more data that we're contending with. And so companies and governments and a variety of other organizations need employees with skills to develop algorithms to help process that data in software, as well as data scientists and analysts and statisticians to interpret the data. And this is not really just about pure traditional tech companies and finding employment for those companies. It's also about a variety of other occupations and industry sectors in the state. We recently completed a study that showed that for every job that's technical in nature that exists within a tech company narrowly defined in Oregon, there's exactly one technical job that exists in any number of other sectors in the state that are not tech. So as we start to see tech playing an increasingly large role in things like agriculture and fisheries and forest products and things like manufacturing, there's a need for the same types of skilled labor that you traditionally would find in tech firms. So there's also, apart from these sort of economic development outcomes, I think a very important equity issue here. And so about 1% of degrees awarded by Oregon's public universities are for mathematics majors, and that's also a pretty low number nationally. Of the degrees, the recipients are overwhelmingly male and white, and that's another issue that the tech industry faces in terms of its employment base in general. And so there's an incentive and an interest in trying to diversify the population. And so anything that really helps to expand access to these types of foundational skill sets is hugely important. And as we look to the need for teachers as well, especially in rural parts of the state that are trained in mathematics, to be able to teach the future employees of tomorrow, SB 420 helps to address that. So for these reasons and more, we really think that SB 420 is the right approach to solving the qualified talent shortage in Oregon, using Oregon employees and developing a talent pipeline to help grow the state's economy. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing Intel Corporation. As most of you probably know, Intel is the state's largest private employer. We're pushing a headcount of about 19,000 people in Washington County these days. And it's also important to note that Intel in Oregon is the R&D center for the entire company. Most of the new products that have an Intel brand are designed and initially produced in Hillsboro, Oregon. We have factories around the world where we do volume production, but really Intel is, in many ways, is an Oregon company these days with the bulk of our cutting-edge research here in Oregon. So we're here today to lend support for Senate Bill 420-1 as a way to increase math major graduation rates and secondarily to do the study part of the bill, which says how can we do a better job in doing math education. I figured it would be a pet project for the chair, knowing of his past in doing something that most of us never could try to do. This is a rifle shot bill, obviously. It's one piece of a big puzzle, and I just want to use a moment to remind us that we have many other pieces of this puzzle addressing the broader issue, the CTE STEM initiatives that this body has so invested in the last several years, a variety of public and private sector initiatives to increase diversity in the workplace, as well as support for after-school programs such as Lego Robotics and other programs like that. And just to put in a plug for my company, we last year announced a multi-year $300 million diversity investment in our workforce, and we are putting the numbers up on the webpage, and we are measuring on an annual basis, and we're saying how well we're doing. It's a new targeted initiative, but it's well underway, and so that's our contribution to that very important task, and this would be another contribution along those lines. So thank you very much, and I applaud the senator for the bill and urge your passage.
Any questions for either of these? Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there's no one else out there that looks like they're trying to get up. So we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 420. We have a couple of work sessions that will go, and one of them just surprised me no end. So. First one, and I guess I want to make sure that people are okay there. Have everybody looked at these? Are there any questions on either of these? Okay. I will say we're going to open a work session for Senate Bill 207. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 207. We looked into IB courses and all sorts of things that didn't fit this relating clause. We will come back to that at some point. We did change it a little bit, so you can give an explanation of where it's at with respect to AP. We took out a lot of the, what would I call it, options for people, and just basically said if you get a 3, you get a credit, and it transfers to colleges. And I just think it's the right thing to do. We've played around with figuring out credits at community college to universities long enough, and I think the history from AP, from my perspective, has been a good one with respect to the kids that have successfully completed the program. So there we go. Senator Lithicum.
Sure. Let's see. Chair Roblin, I make a motion to adopt the -1 amendments or the -1 amendments, which are dated March 1st, if that's correct.
That's good.
For Senate Bill 207.
So Senator Lithicum moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 207. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So moved. Now, the second part of that.
Chair Roblin, I would make a motion to move that Senate bill with as amended to Senate Bill 207 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Lithicum moves Senate Bill 207 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? And I'll carry the bill unless anybody else really wants to. Okay, I'm good with that. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 207, and we'll open a work session. And the reason our young people are here from FSA, we're going to open a
work session.
It was good. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 230. I think we have a couple amendments for this one, and I think we need both of them. Yeah, we're going to have Mr. Beyer come up.
He always screws things up.
Well, we had a problem. We were going to try to do amendments, so he came with them this morning, and we were able to get those amendments done today and a physical back for a bill that's going to Ways and Means. So they didn't have to do as much with Amazing Means. I'm impressed. Lisa did a nice job. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here representing the Oregon Agricultural Teachers Association. And, yes, I would like to thank your staff. Lisa did a great job running these issues through starting this morning. So you have in front of you two different amendments, a dash one and a dash three amendments that we would appreciate both being adopted into this bill. I will speak very briefly to both of those. Mr. Chair, the dash one amendments is an amendment that removes section three from the bill. Section three is of the original bill is dealing with making sure that the FFA programs and agricultural education programs qualify under ballot measure 98 as CTE. The rules adopted by Department of Education since the bill was printed pretty much mirror this language, and we know now that FFA programs and agricultural education programs will qualify, so this is not needed in the bill. So we'd like to just remove that section from the bill. That's the dash one. The dash three amendment is the one we started working on this morning. So, and the reason for that became necessary. On Monday, there is a House bill version of this bill, and in the hearing and work session on that bill, it became very clear that some of the wording under section one of the bill was not clear, and it was creating confusion. So we decided that rather than to have that confusion again, we needed to clarify what was meant by it. So you will see in the dash three amendments, it deals with, started on page two, and subsection one of section one, and what's that just clarifies what's meant by that section. So that's the main piece. That as my clients looked at the testimony from Monday's committee and realized that there's a few things that could be clarified also, so we dropped a couple commas, we dropped the word school or at one place, just made sure that the wording was correct, that mirrors what the Department of Education does now and the state FFA does now. So those are the rest of the very technical changes in the amendment of the dash three. With that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Any questions? Thank you for being here, and thank you very much. So,
you.
Senator Lithicum.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated March 3rd and also adopt the
one at a time.
Sorry.
So Senator Lithicum moves that we adopt the dash one amendments dated today. Oh, no, March dated 3rd. March 3rd.
Come on. I said March 3rd.
March 3rd, you did. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? So ordered. Senator Lithicum.
I'll repeat the motion referencing the dash three amendments, which were adopted or referenced today, March 9th. And those are also perfectly appropriate for adoption.
Okay. Senator Lithicum moves the dash three amendments dated today, the 9th. The Senate Bill 230. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, they are adopted. Senator Lithicum.
Chair Roblin, I will move for the adoption of Senate Bill 230 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Lithicum moves Senate Bill 230 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be sent to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I fully support this. I'm a former FFA member myself. My only concern, Mr. Chair, is siloing CTE funding. I want to make sure that schools have, and there are schools that are going to use this for this purpose, but I just want to make sure that the schools are treated equitably and fairly with distribution of Measure 98 dollars.
And I tend to really agree. I think the $98 are the kinds of things that districts are going to have to make. I just hope that as they work through this, that they say there's a set amount of money and give school districts the option about how to do that and give them a list of options that would meet those requirements. And I think this one fits into that precisely.
So. Well, Mr. Chair, it most definitely fits.
Right. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
But I just, you know, Mr. Chair, you know very well that if I had my choice, we'd just give all the money to the school districts and let them figure out the best way to educate kids. But
I do understand that. So,
and they give it all over.
Have we taken the vote? Yes, sir, yeah. Oh, that was the discussion. Any further discussion? Thank you. Is there any opposition to this bill? Seeing none, it passes, and we don't need a carrier because it's going to Ways and Means.
Coming to a subcommittee near you.
Yeah, that's true. I will get to see this bill again. So anything else to come to the order? I, again, appreciate this committee for a lot of reasons. One is that people ask good questions and have are ready to do that. And if
we may need a new committee rule to limit the number of questions Senator Gelser can ask on any particular bill. But other than that, I think.
And,
we're
and
okay.
The other part is that there, as is this case, there's a number of bills that we get to hear that come from members of this committee. It is something that's important to all of the members on this committee.
I think
that.
More important than that is a math class with an understanding of what the number one might possibly mean when used in the context of one more question.
Sarah has never said, though, I know she is fairly mathematically inclined, but she's never said that that was her favorite subject.
I've used my words for the day. Thank you.
One more.
I'm filling out numbers.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Senator Gelser, okay. In a crowd this size, you're not outnumbered, okay? I would never assume that. So
with that, we're going to close our education meeting for today, and I appreciate everybody's being here. Thank you very much.